Until the film works out, we'll begin. It's very difficult for me to stand in front of you right now and discuss this topic, this issue that fell upon us at the end of last week, Thursday evening. My connections to the Yeshiva's Merkaz Harav have been for many, many years. I've been studying there as a student for 3 years after finishing Hesder program at KBY. Then an 8-year interval where I was at a Kollel learning at Chemda, and ever since I've been spending all my mornings not only at Merkaz Harav but specifically in the library where this all happened. I would like to describe first of all what had happened that terrible evening as far as I've gotten information from fellows who were there, and a close friend of mine, actually a neighbor living in our building, one floor below, was one of the two heroes of this terrible, shocking situation, Yitzchak Dadon. And we were fortunate enough, neighbors of the building, to be able to go down to his, join him after the Shabbos meal of this past Shabbos, with our families, of three families living in the building, together with his own family, and as much as possible to be thankful to Hashem for him remaining alive himself and being able to, in a courageous, very courageous way, to save the lives of many others that could have been killed together with the rest. He described to us exactly, blow by blow, what had happened that evening, which I will try to explain to you right now. It was approximately 8:32 or 33, I'm not exactly sure about the exact moment, when suddenly appears a man with seeming to have light color skin, light color hair, not appearing anything suspicious, with a box in his hand, large box in his hand. And at that time, the Yeshiva Tzirim, which is the boys' high school, the Yeshiva High School of Merkaz Harav, affiliated to Merkaz Harav, those guys were preparing for a Misibat Rosh Chodesh in their Beis Medrash, which is separate from the Beis Medrash of the older guys, fellows as of your age and up, who learn in the Yeshiva Gvoha at Merkaz Harav. Most of the guys were in their Beis Medrash preparing for this party, and some of them, few of them, were in the library of Merkaz Harav, just to get you acquainted and placed in the area to be get yourself familiar with what the structure of the buildings there. As one enters the gate of the large courtyard before the yeshiva, in front of him is a large courtyard, and then three buildings surrounding this courtyard. To his left, facing the steps as he enters the gate, to his left is the Yeshiva Letzirim, that's where the high school is. Right across from the entrance is the dormitory building, where the ground floor of the dormitory building is this library. On top of it, four more flights on top of the library are the dormitories. And then to the right is the main building, which is the Shibat Merkaz Harav itself, where the fellows learn, the Beis Medrash. They have downstairs Chadar Ochel, and below that an institution called Halacha Bura, where they read out Gemaras that maybe some of you may have here. In any case, this fellow comes up, enters the courtyard with this large box, and some students of the Yeshiva Letzirim have eye contact with him, they see him, and they make fun as a joke, "What are you holding there? Are you bringing a TV in for our party?" Obviously these guys haven't seen, I don't know if they've seen ever a show on TV, but they thought this is some type of filming for this party or something of that sort. And he ignored them, kept on walking up the courtyard past those few fellows. And then the story is that his first intentions were to veer left towards the Yeshiva Letzirim, where tens of the students were preparing in the Beis Medrash for this party. Luckily enough, there was a guard situated in the entrance to their building. Therefore, he decided to avoid that building and to head straight towards the dormitory building, which beside it, on the ground floor, is the library. Heading towards the dormitory, he sees two fellows standing right at the entrance to the building, inside the building, where there's a phone booth. Still one of those basic phone booths that some people still use. Standing there and waiting to call family members, whoever they were wishing to call. At that moment, he grabs his rifle and begins shooting. He shoots at them, at those two first, and kills them on the spot. When I entered on Friday that area, you see on the floor bullet holes on the floor itself. Why were they on the floor? Bullet holes should go straight forward into the wall. The answer is, he was making sure they're dead. After they collapsed on the floor, he just went over and shot downwards at them, make sure he kills them. At that point, the library is closest to this opening area of the dormitory, so obviously guys in the library hear the shooting. The first few seconds, they feel that it's something to do with Purim. Fireworks or play guns that kids use sometimes, especially Rosh Chodesh Adar, very appropriate for that time, so they weren't taking great notice to what was going on. When they heard the extra shooting, when he was shooting at the floor, then they started realizing that this may be a terrorist attack. The first one to realize this, in the library, there are two side rooms inside the library where they're meant to be used as chadrei sheket, rooms to learn quietly at. The library itself is not like a university library where you must be quiet. The library itself is full of kol Torah. When you learn in the library, you can learn out loud. But there are two separate rooms that one is able to enter, and there you must learn quietly. So, the moment they realized what was going on, the first bunch closest to those two rooms began running into those rooms. The further one away, got filled up with somewhat like 20 fellows in that room. Some of them having been already in the room, waiting for a shir to be given by one of the rabbis of the yeshiva, where by a miracle was a drop late, this rabbi, even though he's known to be punctual usually, because he had forgotten something, at a book at home that he was supposed to use for that shir. He came into the yeshiva, to the courtyard, as the shooting began. He obviously backed out, backed away, and went running home. But the fellows that were waiting for his shir, and those who had joined them from the library, all gathered inside that inner room. And two fellows were in the second separate room, quiet room, the one closer to the library itself. And I was also told that some of those who were further away, way back inside the library, had attempted to also flee towards that room, and they didn't make it before the closing of the room. And the closing was done by all the tables inside the room pushed towards the doorway so that the terrorists were able to enter the room, and all the guys lying on the floor. Some fellows weren't able to make it. Desperately, they knocked at the door. And the fellows inside weren't sure whether these were fellows of the yeshiva, or was this a terrorist or terrorists? You know how many were there. And again, just by a miracle, they felt that they should open the door, and they did, and they welcomed those two inside as well. Anyway, this terrorist kept on going towards the library, and as he reaches the entrance of the library, still outside of the library, that's where he meets Yonadav Hirschfeld, and a Shana Aleph fellow of the yeshiva of Merkez Harav, and he shoots at him in the back, and he escapes running away into the building of the yeshiva itself, the yeshiva Gvoha, the third building over there, which has an opening right by a side entrance right by the library. He enters that while he was shot at the back and runs down towards the Chadar Ochel and collapses on the way and dies. Inside the library were left all those that weren't able to make it yet into those inner rooms or to escape outwards. Those are the ones in the inner parts of the library. Now the library itself, inside, is sectioned. There are the main room has many tables and chairs to learn the chavruta, and the side part has books stacked on shelves, many rows of books, and a narrow area between each row to enable people to reach out and take a book, barely able for two people to stand one beside the other. Narrow corridors full of books. So this terrorist began shooting at the people sitting by the tables or standing, and that's where he shot Doron Mahata, who is the Ethiopian, the oldest fellow killed. He was shot at right by his Gemara, collapsing on top of his Gemara. Later on, he began entering each and every narrow corridor of bookshelves and seeking for more fellows who may have been hiding between the books, amongst the books. And that's where he shot at several other fellows, wounding them or killing them. Later on, I'll describe some of the miracles that happened inside the library. And then he began looking around for more fellows. He then began walking the other direction of the library towards those rooms, inner rooms, which were also some office rooms of the librarian, a machsan, with books still haven't been yet taken out to the library. He tried opening each room, and they were all locked. And again, tremendous siyata dishmaya, that room with those 20 fellows, he thought was locked as well, even though it truthfully wasn't, just that the doors, the tables were set so strongly and powerfully on the door that he couldn't budge the door, so he felt it was locked as well. So he did not open any of those, he wasn't successful in opening any of those doors. The final quiet room, where only two fellows were in, they felt that they were in terrible danger while hearing all the shooting that was going on in the library, because they were only two alone, whereas the other one had 20 fellows. So one of them suggested that they open the door and try to run away. Now the only way to run away out of those rooms is through the library, and through the main entrance to the library, or exit of the library. One of them felt it was a smart idea, one of them felt it wasn't. The one who felt in a split second, you don't have any time to think. The one who felt it was actually did it. He opened the door and started running out. The terrorist saw him, aimed the gun at him, shot at him, but Baruch Hashem missed, and he was able to run out. Later on, he himself doesn't remember who the other fellow was in the room with him. Later on, I was told that the other fellow did the same thing, and he was also able to escape. So Baruch Hashem, they also made it out without any harm. As he finished the job, sort of speaking, in the library, he decides to leave the library and see who he can get outside. At that point, beforehand, actually, the moment shootings began, in the yeshiva itself, in the main base medrash, there were somewhat like 60 fellows learning Torah at the time. This was an hour after they returned. The entire yeshiva, myself including, had prayed at the Kotel by the call of Mordechai Eliyahu for the well-being of Sderot, the people of Sderot. They came back an hour before to the yeshiva, having then dinner, supper, and then most of them were at the process of beginning night seder, which starts approximately that time, approximately 8:30, 8:45. So there's somewhat of a short break in between dinner and night seder. So fortunately, many of the fellows were in the dormitory in their rooms preparing, getting ready for night seder. That's why there were only 60 present at the Beit Medrash at the time. When they began hearing the shooting, again, the very beginning they felt it must be a game, a Purim type spiel. But when someone realized that this was something real, he yelled out, Pigua, and the moment people heard that word, they began fleeing away through the opposite exit of the yeshiva, not the one leading into the courtyard where this terrible man, terrible creature was doing what he was doing. They went through, they left through the opposite way, a side exit of the yeshiva, and down out to the street where Rav Ram Shapira, Zatzal, used to live. His street, his apartment. They were able to escape entirely. The entire yeshiva was able to escape that way, except for one brave man. That was this Yitzhak Dadon. Yitzhak Dadon had a gun on him, the only one, I assume, and he went the other way. He did not go wisely enough. He did not leave the yeshiva the normal way, the normal wide exit of the yeshiva. He went climbing. It's hard to explain, but in any case, he went climbing into the porch that leads to a ledge, a low roof, right above the exit and entrance, main exit and entrance of the library. And he positioned himself in a cover-up way, right on top of the entrance to the library, facing the entrance. He's on the roof, he's on this ledge, facing the entrance. Positioned himself with a gun, with his gun out, ready to shoot. He hears the shooting in the library. He couldn't help it. He told me later on that was the most terrible moments for him, to realize that this man was shooting at such innocent, holy people, and he wasn't able to do anything, hopeless. Suddenly, out comes this terrorist out of the library, and again, assuming that he had done what he was able to inside. But immediately as he exits, he starts shooting upwards, towards the sky, either in order to cover up for himself, that no one should shoot at him, or in an attempt to shoot at the fellows that were on the floor, that were in the floors on top of the library, in the dormitory, in their rooms, attempting to shoot at them. By the way, there was another shiur going on the first floor, right on top of the library, the floor on top of the library, with one of the rabbis called Rav Igal Lehrer, who is a dayan as well. And the fellows, again, realizing what was going on, they all had jumped from the first floor, again, to the back side of the yeshiva, onto the street. Some of them were slightly injured just because of that. The rabbi himself wasn't willing to jump, not because he was afraid of jumping. It was because he said, I'm not going to leave my students alone while this is going on. He felt he had to go down and help them out. He couldn't leave them. The mysterious nefesh of a rabbi towards his students. His own students at the shir, at the class, told him, it's impossible. What can you do? How can you help them out? You're endangering yourself. Just by telling him that they themselves will not leave the classroom until he comes along with them, just that convinced him to go along. And they helped him down while jumping. Some say they even had to push him down, but he was saved as well as they escaped from the back way. Anyway, the terrorist was shooting as I said before, upwards towards the sky. Yitzhak Dadon, lying down, right in front of him, couldn't do anything. He had to duck so that none of these crazy shootings would hit him or harm him. So he had to duck down and continued on the shooting. Baruch Hashem, that didn't do any damage or harm to anyone. Then the shooting stopped. So Dadon lifted up his head to see where the terrorist is, and he disappeared from his eyesight. He didn't know where he was at the moment. And then comes running in through the courtyard, up the stairs, towards the library, another Jew, later on known as David Shapira, the second brave hero of the story, with an M16 rifle, looking for the terrorists. He was actually the only one that was willing to confront the terrorists face to face. That's what he was there for. He came all the way out. He's not a yeshiva student. He heard what was going on from his own house, took the rifle and came running in. Later on I heard that policemen were standing already at the entrance of the gates of the yeshiva when this is going on, and for some very odd reason were helpless. Not only were they helpless, they were waiting for the special forces to come in, the Yamam, as we call them in Israel, best trained men in Israel for these types of circumstances. Not only did they not do anything, they tried to prevent David Shapira from coming in. They were going to protect him from any harm that would happen to him. He just pushed them aside and went running in, luckily enough. He comes in, and Yitzhak Dadon, lying on top there on the roof, yells out to him, "I'm a Jew, I'm a Jew." First of all, that he should realize this is all happening at night, 8:30, 8:33. Nighttime, no one sees who's who and what's what. Calls out to him, "I'm a Jew." And then he yells out to him, "Where is the terrorist?" So he says, "I don't know, he just vanished, he just disappeared from my eyesight. He may have gone up to the Beis Medrash, which is by the side door, up three steps and you're into the Beis Medrash. Or he might have gone back into the library." David Shapira decides to run up towards the yeshiva, towards the main building. As he runs up, the terrorist suddenly appears back outside of he had supposedly gone back into the library and stepped back out of the library. At that point, he wasn't shooting anymore. At that point, Yitzhak Dadon aimed his gun and shot two shots at him and hit him. David Shapira came running down at that second from the Beis Medrash back to where this all happened and finished off the job. Only later on, a few seconds later, the imam came by. Anyway, this was the course of events. And I would like to now go on to further description of... Oh, shall I film first? Okay. Of the miracles that occurred, even though the results were devastating and terrible for us, but still within and during this whole thing, there's a lot of chesed of Hashem that saved many lives of others. So just several examples of cases that I've spoken to fellows around. I called up some fellows that I knew they were supposed to be at in the library at the time, and each one with his remarkable story of how he was saved. Just a few examples. One fellow who normally sits in the library all day long, a guy in his 30s, married with several kids, he usually leaves the library every day at 8:45, which means he should have been there at the time. That day, he had vaguely remembered that his wife asked of him to come back a little earlier that day to help her out with something. So, packing up his stuff, he left at approximately 8:25 from the library. He comes home 7 minutes later, which was actually the moment that the shooting began in the library, not hearing anything about it, only being informed later on about it. He enters his home, and his wife says, "Wow, what a surprise. Thank you for coming early." So he goes to her, "Didn't you ask me, didn't you request me to come earlier tonight?" She says, "I never did. It was a mistake of his that he thought he had a question on it." Then another next door neighbor of mine, different one, not Yitzhak Dadon, a fellow called Aya Merzer, right across the hallway from us. With him is even more amazing. First of all, he's in charge of the Shiva Letzirim in the evening. That's his job, to be together with him as sort of a meshiv or madrich, a night seder. He knows the fellows very well, those who were killed, those who were injured, and so on. That day, the Shiva Letzirim, since they were preparing for their Mesivat Rosh Chodesh of Adar, that day he was free. So he stayed, remained learning in the library. At 8:29, he calls up his wife to ask, is he becoming home at that moment, or can he stay on longer? And she said, since their son, the baby, wasn't falling asleep, she needs help. It took him 2 minutes to pack up his stuff, return some books to the shelves. At 8:31, he left the library. I just have chills describing this. 8:31, he leaves the library, walks down the steps, through the courtyard, beyond the gate. A minute later, he hears the shooting. It means his son saved his life. By not cooperating with the mother, and not willing to fall asleep, that's the reason he went home early, he came home earlier. And not only that, this fellow normally sits right across the table from Doron, who was killed on the spot immediately when the terrorists entered the library. So he knows for sure what would have been the end of him. Other stories, like inside the library itself, an amazing story that a fellow who had positioned himself within those narrow corridors where the books were, trying to hide himself, and the terrorists going from one to the other, shooting at everyone in between the books, beyond the books. This fellow saw the gun in front of his eyes. He saw death. The gun wouldn't activate. It didn't shoot. He tried, attempted, didn't shoot. He went on to the next, it shot. Went on to the next, it shot. Just didn't work for him. He says, my life was given to me as a gift. Just Hashem decided that I should stay. I think the greatest miracle of all this was that the terrorists made, quote-unquote, the mistake to begin his shooting at the entrance to the dormitory, as we described before. Had he begun either in the library itself, there would have been no time for those 20 guys to escape to that inner room. They would have been all caught while learning on their tables in the library. So that's 20 more. And furthermore, had he begun in the third building, he had attempted to go into the Yeshiva Letzirim, the high school, and he started off in that middle building. Had he begun this whole murderous attack in the main building, 60 fellows would have been caught unready and from their backs. Because when you enter the Beis Medrash, the guys learning face frontwards, face down in Kodesh, and he comes in from the back, as like from here. Who knows what could have happened then? So, all these types of situations and people who were meant to be or not to be at that time there, just proves that, after all, Hashem was with us and rescuing all those that were meant to be saved. Another short story I just remember now was the same idea of a fellow who normally would have a chavrusa with someone at Mechon Meir. He used to learn in the library, but at Mechon Meir, which is another yeshiva down the block from Merkez Arav, he used to learn the chavrusa down there. And he used to leave the library approximately at 8:30 in order to make it on time to his chavrusa in Mechon Meir. that evening, again, packed up, just as this was almost the beginning, started leaving, and then he receives a message on his answering machine in his cell phone telling him that that evening the Sarusa called him up and said that he would be late by half an hour, he could stay in the library. Had he gotten that message 3 minutes earlier and remained in the library, it would have been the end of it. Again, by mistake, he was let out from the library. Anyway, many, many other cases. Myself, I came back from the prayer in the Kotel, as I said before. I hadn't come back with the Hasa'ah, transportation of the yeshiva, because I made a detour and visited my parents. They were just going to go overseas for several days, so I stopped by them with my oldest son. And normally on Thursdays, every Thursday evening, I take my son over to my grandfather, who you guys have met at the more, much more happy occasion of Hasana Torah, to learn with Gemara. So he was with me, and I took him over to my grandfather. And they had their session. We were coming back by bus towards the yeshiva. I left my car parked right at the entrance to the yeshiva. I left it parked there in the morning. Used the yeshiva's transportation with my son to the Kotel and back by bus. As I was just going to walk up the street of Merkaz Arav, Rechob Tzvi Yehuda, I was just at, whoever is familiar with the neighborhood, Beit Chinuch Ivrim, which is just a block away. That's when I heard tons of ambulances and saw and sirens and police cars going up the street. I told my son, this doesn't sound good. And then I see a person running away from that area, and I know him. I ask him what's going on. He says there's shooting at Merkaz. So he just headed the opposite direction and went home a different way, left my car there. My personal computer was left in the library as well. The next morning, on Friday, I was able to get to the car. It was just smashed by the police. The window was smashed in order to inspect the car if anything suspicious was inside it. The office should be reimbursed for that, but that's not the main point of this whole thing. And my computer was just, the computer holder was cut open by the police again to inspect what was inside it. All marked by the police, every single part of it, the car itself also. And Baruch Hashem, that should be the only loss. Anyway, back to describing now the third stage of this discussion, and that is a few words about these fellows that were killed. Each one of them I do not know personally, especially not those five youngsters of the Yeshiva Letzirim. I do know the face of the oldest one who had died, the Ethiopian fellow, and the other two I don't know either. But I heard just last night on radio many, many stories about these fellows. Okay. No. Okay. So I'll just try to describe a little bit about some of them. This is just in order to be influenced by their beautiful personalities. It says in the Midrash about the Pasuk in Shir HaShirim, Yarad Adi Legano Lilkot Shoshanim. Hashem, our beloved Dadi, descends, comes down to his garden in order to pick the flowers, to pick the roses from his garden. These were the roses. These were the purest of pure, the holiest of holy. Some descriptions about this Doron, Ethiopian fellow. He went through in his personal life what all Am Yisrael has gone through in the history of our nation. His parents, very simple, maybe primitive people living in Ethiopia, made the difficult journey all the way to Israel, made Aliyah, ignorant of any knowledge of in Judaism. He was the one, on his back, on his shoulders, he was the one to support his family. If it's monetary, if it's spiritual, any type of support. His sister, at her eulogy by the grave, said that just out of her heart, she burst out crying, who'll prepare Purim for us? Who'll buy the matzahs for us for Pesach? Who'll say the brachos for us? Doron, you're the one. And he wasn't only supporting his own private family. His intentions were to become a leader within the entire Ethiopian community here in Israel. He felt that that was his shlichus, that was his role in life. He was learning diligently, studying Dinei Melicha at the time. He was killed right on top of the Shulchan Aruch while he was involved in the halachos of Melicha, of the salting of meat to kasher it, in order to teach this to others, to become a leader, a rabbi, to answer questions and to teach within the Ethiopian community. When he was asked by Rabbi Burstein, who's another a leading figure in the yeshiva, what type of shidduch is he looking for to help him out to find his mate, his answer was, I want a girl that would be willing to have an open house. I'm not going to lead my life as a private human being. I want my house to be a public house. That type of girl I want to marry. Going on to another fellow, Yonadav Hirschfeld, who is a Shana Aleph student of the yeshiva. Just seeing his face. By the way, one more point. Doron the Ethiopian had served in the army, and not only that, he was fighting viciously in combat in this past war, this last war, most recent war in Lebanon. 2 months he was in Lebanon. Back to Yadav Hirschfeld, just seeing his face, I saw a picture of his face. Pretty pure, innocent fellow, peot dangling down his ears. They say about him that ever since he became 16 or so, he began learning, specializing in Mishnah. He reached the point where he was able to cover 18 prakim of Mishnah a day, just during Seder Erev, his night Seder. 18 prakim a day. Enabling him to complete Shas every single month. Shas, Mishnayos, every single month. When they found his Mishnah, he had the number 25 on the page he was on, meaning the 25th time to have completed Shas Mishnayos. In the past 25 months, 2 years, he was doing this. And the story goes that he once met a great Talmid Chacham, discussed with him an issue of Torah, and this Talmid Chacham quoted the Mishnah. So this Yonadav youngster, 18 year older, maybe he was 17 at the time, spoke up to this rabbi and said, there's no such Mishnah in Shas. Now when you're Baki, sometimes you know where a certain Mishnah appears in Shas. That itself is something tremendous. But to be able to say there's no such Mishnah in Shas, that's total, complete kiddush of the entire Shas. And they argued back and forth, and it turns out that he was right. The rabbi was quoting a Tosefta. It was the Mishnah. He was caught right out of the doorway from the library. Another fellow about the Shiva Letzirim, a youngster, 15 year older. He was known to have been sitting all the way in back every night Seder and learning his own stuff. He told his rabbis, from the age of 15, 16, he already had his independence in learning. He told his rabbis he wants to focus on some other book, one that wasn't learned by the fellows in the yeshiva. Which book was it? Not sure you guys are familiar enough with this book, but it's called the Shev Shmaitza. The Shev Shmaitza is one of the most difficult, complicated books ever written by an Achron called Rabbi Leib, who was the Ketzot HaChosha. He had written the Ketzot HaChosha and the Avnei Miluim and the Shev Shmaitza. The Shev Shmaitza is issues that are so complicated that the greatest Talmidei Chachamim barely attempt to touch and to learn. He was learning that. word for word, page after page. And altogether, what were those fellows doing in the library at that time? Most of the Shivat HaTzairim guys were preparing for the Mesivas Rosh Chodesh in their Beis Medrash, which was perfectly fine. That was supposed to be done. That was the schedule of the yeshiva of their high school. Whereas these few fellows decided that since there are enough taking care of that, they wish to sit and learn in the library. That's what they were doing in the library altogether to begin with. And the courage of one of the fellows there, he was the only one that attempted doing this, although he unfortunately wasn't successful, but one of these Shivat HaTzairim fellows, I'm not sure who this was, I'm not sure if he's one of those that was just wounded or killed, but one of these youngsters, 15, 16 years old, I remember this fellow, this terrible monster, was 20 years old. So even just to fight against him with the bare hands, he would not have been able to overcome, let alone having a weapon in his hands. This young fellow jumped on the terrorist and tried stopping him. He was thrown off and shot at. I'm not sure if he was wounded or killed. Another one, who was inside one of those narrow corridors between the books, amongst the books, tried while the terrorist was switching his magazine at the time, he attempted to grasp at the rifle, at the gun, and pull it out of his hands. And whoever knows, those familiar with shooting, after hundreds of bullets, or even several bullets, the barrel, thank you, of the gun is steaming hot, boiling hot, you can't touch it. And he grasped on it, and his whole hand was burnt, got a burn, and he wasn't able to grab it out of his hand, but I think because of that, he was saved, because the terrorist just went on to the next fellow. So we see on one hand, we see these fellows were totally devoted to Torah, totally devoted to Hashem, to the world of good, the world of purity. These are people that did a lot of chesed. If I go back to Doron, an amazing story also. This Aryeh, who is my next door neighbor, described before leaving the library just 3 minutes before this all happened. He used to sit right across Doron every day. He noticed that for the past few months, he hasn't been appearing during morning Seder. It was only there afternoon and evening. So just a week ago, he asked Doron, how come you're not appearing during morning Seder? He knew he was a great learner. So his answer was, in his very humble way, was that there was a person who was injured, maybe by a car accident or something happened to him, and since then he was crippled and poor, needy type fellow, and he mentioned to someone that he would like someone to learn with him, and Doron volunteered to be the one for months and months to spend the entire Seder Boker, 5 hours of the morning, to learn with this crippled fellow stuff that he would not have done had it been his normal course of studies. So these guys are involved in Chesed, involved in Torah, involved in the world of purity, the world of what Hashem desires. And we should just be able to be fortunate enough to learn from them, just to touch the heels, the bottom of their personalities in our life, in this world. Last and final issue I would like to address is what I'm sure after all this is something that is a question that comes up to everyone, and anything we try to explain or to discuss will never answer the question. And two-phase question: A, why did this happen? And B, what is the meaning for us? What can we learn from all this in our lives? First question can never be answered, can never be fully answered. Kilo machshevotai, machshevoteichem, velo dachichem drachai, ne'um Hashem. Hashem tells us by the prophet of Yeshayahu that his thoughts are not ours. His ways are not ours. We will never be able to understand his ways. Had we been able to, we would have been him. But in some attempt to try to reach some type of grasping of what happened here, I would like to first point out to a Gemara in Sanhedrin, last parak of Sanhedrin, parak Chelek, which discusses at length many issues of Mashiach, of Olam Haba, of Gan Eden, of Geula. And one of the pages there, if I remember correctly, it's a designer, so remarkable dispute between several Amoraim there. Rabbi Yochanan and some others on one side say the following expression: Yete velo achmine. He should come regarding the Mashiach. He should come, and I do not want to see it happen. I do not want to be there. Yete velo achmine. Rabbi Yochanan and other Amoraim, together with him, were not willing to undergo the horrors and sufferings and terrible events leading to the coming of the Mashiach, in the footsteps of the Mashiach. They, in their vision, back in those days, we're talking about at least 1,000 years ago, when they, much more actually, 70, almost 2,000 years ago, when they envisioned by the prophets what will be going on during the time of the near coming of the Mashiach, they prefer not being here. Whereas of Yosef, the only Amora with the opposite position, Yete Ve'achmine Ve'etiv betula demetalalta dechamarta demashicha. I prefer for him to come and for me to be sitting, seeing it happening, and to be sitting in the shadow of the fesses of the donkey of the Mashiach. What does this mean? This means that he's willing to undergo any suffering, even to the lowest possible degree, to become almost unhuman, tortured, or whatever this could be explained by, as long as this is in order to lead to the final redemption. He's going to take upon himself courageously all the events, as long as he remains of Yosef and he remains connected to Torah, remains connected to spirituality, and is one of those that it will enable the Mashiach to appear in this world. We here, living in this generation, were forced. We were born into being students of Rav Yosef. We have no choice. We weren't given a choice. We can't pick if to be the students of Rav Yochanan and to prefer not to be at the time, or to be the students of Yosef and to undertake all the difficulties. We are here. And we are up to the final stages. Puts us the Mashiach very close, very near, and therefore these events, as horrific as they are here to lead us to the final redemption. That's one point we must realize. Second point, the Gemara in Yuma. If I have more time. Stop here. Or? Okay, it's working now?
Yeah.
The Gemara in Yuma Samech Tet 69b reads as follows. I think this may be one of the most amazing, outstanding Gemaras ever written. Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Lama nikra shmam anshei Knesset HaGedola? Why were they named these great sages of the Beit Sheni days? Why were they called anshei Knesset HaGedola? Shechiziru atara liyoshna. They returned the crown to its original position. What are we talking about? Ata Moshe Amar, Akel HaGedol HaGibor VeHaNora. Moshe Rabbeinu in Devarim had described Hashem as being Hagadol, the great, Hagibor, the courageous, Ve'anora, people having fear and awe from him. Ata Yirmiyahu Navi, which was the prophet at the time of the destruction of the first temple. He was the one living then. Ata Yirmiyahu Amar, Ovdei Kochavim Umazalot Mekarkerim Beichalo, Ayei Nora Otav, Lo Amar Nora. There's a pasuk in Yirmiyahu where Yirmiyahu cries out to Hashem, prays to him, deep prayers to beg for forgiveness from Israel, and there he eliminates, he doesn't use one of these three descriptions of Hashem. He does not use the word Nora. How come? Seeing, observing the situation where Nebuchadnezzar and his soldiers conquer Yerushalayim, destruct the base of Mikdash, and dance Mekarkirim Beichalo inside Kodesh HaKodashim, inside the Kodesh, they're able to dance inside there with victory over us. How can I say Nora? Where is the fear of Hashem? Ata Daniel, later on, towards the end of the 70 years in exile in Babel, came Daniel and said, "Amar, Ovdei Kochavim Umazalot Mishtabdim Bevanav, Ayei Gvurotav." We find these idol worshippers, these goyim, who enslave Am Yisrael. Where is the courage? Where is the great power of Hashem? Lo amal gibor. So he eliminated the word gibor. We left only with Akel HaGadol, only the great. Atu anshei Knesset HaGdola ve'amru. Later on, at the time actually of Purim, the days of Mordechai, Esther, and Haman, that's when anshei Knesset HaGdola returned to say the entire. To lead back to the entire description of Hashem. Adirabba, zoi gvurato shekoveshet ka'aso venoten erech apayim l'reshayim ve'eloem noraotav shilmalei noraotav uma achat e'ach yichola litkayem bein 70 umot. Meaning, Yirmiyahu and Daniel, being part of the terrible circumstances that were going on, weren't able to truthfully describe Hashem as Gibor Venora. It's not happening. Everything opposite is happening. And later on, the Gemara says, "V'Rabbanan hechi samchi adatayu ve'akrim adamar Moshe." How is it possible that Yirmiyahu and Daniel are able to eliminate words that Moshe Rabbeinu had used to describe Hashem? Are they any greater than Moshe Rabbeinu? How could this be? Amar Rabbi Yitzchak Barabbi Lazar. מתוך שיודעים בהקדוש ברוך הוא שאמיתי הוא, לפיכך לא כזבו לו. They can't lie. They had the feeling that he's no longer, Hashem is not behaving as a gibor, or not behaving as a nora. And since Hashem himself stands for truth, how could they say something untruthful? How can they lie to him? If so, so what was happening by Anshei Knesset HaGedola? How are they explaining these terms with regards to Hashem? The answer the Gemara here says is that his gvura is that Hashem is able to observe and be patient and watch how his own children are being tortured and terrible things happening to them, and yet withhold his anger against the Rishayim until the proper time comes to punish them. And as the commentary says on the bottom here, the Etz Yosef and the Ein Yaakov on this Gemara, he says, let's picture the case where a father has to take his own son into surgery to amputate his arm or his leg. Is the father able to stay, to be inside the room while this is being done to him? Even though it's for his complete benefit and this must be done to cure him. Is the father able to watch this being done on his own son? For sure not. He leaves the room. Hashem is unable to leave the room. Hashem exists everywhere. And if this must happen in order to cure the world, we'll soon try to attempt to understand in what way can this possibly cure the world. But if this is the only way to cure the world, it has to be done for the own benefit, for the own good of the people, and Hashem being the father of Am Yisrael, Banim Atem Hashem Elokechem, we are the sons of Hashem, he must be there. And yet he's able to withhold and be patient until the Rishayim get what they deserve. Should be quick, Bezat Hashem. And the second idea is Noah Otav. Where is it that we see that Hashem is fearful? People, that his awe, his awness. Where is that described? Says the Gemara, how is it possible that one nation within 70 nations of the world attempting to demolish, to erase us off the face of the earth, how is it possible that we still remain existent? This is only because of his Noraota, because of his honor. Therefore, Hashem Sanadola, we turn this the way to describe Hashem, and this is the way. Where do we mention this? In their name, where have they set these words back into our sayings? That is in the tefillah. Every single Shmoneh Esrei at the very beginning, we're supposed to have greatest kavana, the greatest concentration, the first bracha of Avos. That's where we say Akel LaGadol LaGibor VaNora, and from then on, it's never going to be erased, never going to be eliminated. From then on, Hashem Nesagdola have decided that these are his Gvarosav and these are his Narosav, and that's going to remain there. That's how it's going to be. How is this, as the Gemara describes here, how is this, or the commentary at the bottom here, has this a type of cure, of a medicine to the people? The Or HaChaim HaKadosh, in the beginning of Parshas Ki Tisa, has an unbelievable piece here on the words Ki Tisa et Rosh B'nei Yisrael Lifkudeihem, where I read out two lines of what he says. Ba Katuv LeGalot Nistarot LaHashem Asher Yaseh BeOlamo Davar. This pasuk here reveals to us hidden actions of Hashem that we never ever would be able to understand, but this pasuk reveals to us how Hashem works in his world. Shekol haro'eh yitma. Anyone seeing, observing things of this type happening cannot understand. What is happening? Bilakach ish tzadik yashar kodem zmano yechtzu yamav. Kemishpat amitchayev l'anshei damim u'mirma. When a person, a tzadik yashar, a person who's righteous, who's honest, who's truthful, who's always well-meaning, good-hearted, taken away from us half of the time that a normal person spends in this world. What should have been done to those terrible Rishayim and monsters. There are different options to understand this. I will not read these options because these are the wrong ways to understand. But then the correct way to understand says the Or HaChaim HaKadosh, by explaining this pasuk of Kitisa, is Asher HaKen Amar Kitisa et Rosh B'nei Yisrael Perush Im Tir'e Shistalek Rosh B'nei Yisrael Belo Et Hatam Hu Lifkudeihem. The reason this may happen, that the leaders, the heads of Am Yisrael, like these youngsters who are full of Kedusha, full of truthfulness, full of midos, of good heart, when they're taken away early from us, that is because of lifkudei hem. Al derech omram eshkol hakofer dodi li. Ve'amru zal ish she'akol bo hu kofer nafsham shel Yisrael. No one's complete. Any tzaddik ba'aretz asher aseh tov ve'lo yechata. Everyone has his sins, his areas to progress, to complete himself in. There are certain times where Hashem decides that in order to become kapara, in order to become, to erase many, many, many sins of many, many, many Jews in the world, He will use as a sacrifice these pure neshamos like these taken away from us. That's the point that Rechayim HaKadosh comes to explain to us now. These were the korbanos, as the next leading parsha, Parshas Vayikra, describing all the korbanos. So when the situation is more pleasing, more the correct path, then the animals serve as the korbanos. But sometimes there are times where, for some reason, we have no idea why it fell upon us right now, but there is need to sacrifice the best and the holiest of the fellow of the people of Israel in order for them to become the sacrifices, the korbanos, as a kapara on all the rest of us. Now, what does this mean? This means we owe our life to them. This means that the continuation that they command on us is to continue their ways. Otherwise, the sacrifice goes to waste. If they're taken away in order to become kapara, this means that we're supposed to complete ourselves. We're supposed to correct our ways. Otherwise, chas v'chalila, why was this of any help? Why was this of any use? And therefore, I think the bottom point of all this should be, what should we be taking from this? What should we be learning from all this? There's so many areas to improve in. People are speaking a lot about Achdus, which may be the main major problem of Am Yisrael today. And by the way, I don't know if you noticed a Haredi-dressed rabbi appearing at the funeral. I was told, not sure if this was him, but I was told that the Rebbe of Belz, the Admor of Belz, appeared at Merkaz Arav, at the courtyard, for the funeral. And his Hasidim say that he barely ever goes to any funeral. He felt some type of drawing towards these youngsters, towards this yeshiva. And then later on I was told that Rabbi Yoshiv, who was the greatest posik of these days, connected more to the Haredi circles, anyway, appeared at the funeral of one of these fellows and was driven all the way to Har HaZeitim, where one of these fellows was buried. So we see that the beginning of this type of Achdus is beginning to form. And then many, many other areas. I think the main point for us over here, when should every one of us doesn't have the strength and the power to change the world, but each and every one of us must accept upon himself just one word, the word more. Whatever you've been doing till today, obviously on the path that we're supposed to be going, just do a little bit more. More of Torah. If you've been learning an X amount of time, so you add just a little bit more, 10 more minutes, just because of what happened, you accept upon yourself now a little bit more. You've been doing chesed, just do a little bit more. You've been behaving kindly to people. Be a little bit more kind. I've experienced this just this morning, learning at Merkaz Harav at the yeshiva itself. The library is obviously locked right now. The yeshiva itself. So the fellows there just keep on going, as if nothing had happened. But the opposite, on contrary, that's our true answer to these terrorists. True answer is that we keep on going. We keep on going with more power, more strength in learning. The entire Beis Medrash was full of guys. And you felt in the environment you felt all around was the type of behavior of people so helpful one to another. I just had a missing part in my computer from the case that was ripped open. I just mentioned it to a fellow. He immediately directed me to a fellow that may have known what happened to it, and he wasn't in at the time. Later on, he came back to me with that piece. Just remarkable, the environment now that's being formed there and should be formed anywhere around. So just do more than what you've done. We've been used to doing till now, the positive way, positive direction. Just more. And just to conclude, finally, is there was a phone call received by the yeshiva's office Friday morning. And this was testified by Rav Burstein, who is greatly in charge of what goes on there. He testified that there was a phone call with an Arabic accent of the fellow calling in and saying, "You know why we've chosen Merkaz, this yeshiva, for our terrorist attack? It's because we know that from this yeshiva, the leaders of the Jewish people are being formed, educated, and grown. This yeshiva, Merkaz Harav, stands for Torah, Am Yisrael, and Eretz Yisrael. All three issues. And evil has an instinct, natural instinct in it, to realize where the holiest of holies stands. And it goes straight at it. Doesn't care for other types. It goes straight to the leaders. And since this is what this yeshiva resembles, Yeshivas Merkaz Harav, and I believe that we should be following their ways and accepting upon ourselves this type of ideology and leading the way, continuing to lead and never give up to these terrorists. And they should learn that the more they attempt, the more we go and strive to lead this world to its completion. And just final point is that this all reminded me, while reading Parshas Pekudei, that there's something terribly missing in the Parsha. The description of the building of the Mishkan by Moshe Rabbeinu, the day remarked in Torah, the first of Nisan, the second year upon leaving Egypt, is described very beautifully. Pastoral scene of the Beis HaMikdash being built, and the Mishkan and all the kelim put into place, and beginning functions of each kli, each one, the menorah was lit by Moshe Rabbeinu that same day. The bread, the lechem apanim, was placed on the table. The ktoret was offered on the mizbach hazahav. Sounds like terrific. Vayivarach ata Moshe. The anan, the cloud resembling Hashem, descending down onto the Mishkan. Everyone praising and being in the utmost level of simcha and of kedusha. But something terrible and great is missing in this parsha. In 3 weeks from now, Parsha Shmini, we'll be reading this terrible event of the death of Nadav Avihu. When did that happen? When did they die? That same day. They died on the first day of Nisan upon completion of the building of the Mishkan. Why is that missing in Parshas Pekudei? Why isn't that described? And you can even pinpoint the pasuk that it should be appearing at. When it says that Moshe Rabbeinu had placed the Mizbach HaZahav in its proper place, and then and then offered the ktoret. That's the very spot that it should have said that Nadav Aviv brought in their own fire, which may have been their sin, and from that, and they were burnt to death from within their neshama. I think the reason that this is left out, and obviously you have to realize that Nadav Aviv were tremendous, tremendous, tremendous individuals. Moshe Rabbeinu, the way he consoled Aaron, after his two sons dying that same day, was by telling him Mikrovaya Kadesh, but Pnei Kol HaAm Kaved. Says Rashi there that Moshe Rabbeinu had realized, had known from before, that Hashem was going to do such a thing in order to teach the world that if he does justice to the holiest of holy, it's going to be million times as much more terrible to those who are really wicked. That's the way Hashem teaches and has it for those who don't learn the lesson. Says Moshe Rabbeinu to Aaron, I had felt that it would be us two, Moshe and Aaron, to be punished, to be taken away from Jewish people in order to serve for this purpose. But now I realize that Nadav Aviv are greater than you and me. Now that wasn't just playing games. That wasn't just being nice to Aaron. Moshe stands for truth. He wasn't lying. They were greater than Moshe and Aaron. So imagine the horrific situation when the Mishkan and everything so pastoral and so holy, and this happening. All of Am Yisrael broke out crying. Why is this all ignored in this week's Parsha and Parsha's Kudei? Maybe because there are two levels to view the world that were created in plural. There is this world, Olam Hazeh, and there is the eternal world, Olam Haba, the world of complete good, of no bad, no evil. Even when such terrible, terrible things happen in this world, it may be that in this world we're devastated, grief, sorrow, unable to fathom, to grasp, to understand what goes on. But truthfully, there is another level within this world, which is the eternal world, which lies within us, amongst us, and above us, and everywhere around. And within this world, everything remains pastoral. Everything remains pure and holy. Within the Olam Haba world, nothing is affected by evil. No evil there. There's no evil, no bad. So these youngsters that have died have been connected immediately to Olam Haba. They're lying now, their neshamas are in the greatest of places possible, below Kisei HaKavod, below the throne of Hashem. So they were connected immediately to what we're longing for, to Olam Haba, to Netzach, to eternity. We, left down in this world, have to realize the Noraos of the religious read in Yuma, that Am Yisrael is Am HaNetzach. We are the eternal people. We, just by the mere fact of being born into Am Yisrael, we hold within us this idea of eternity, of all good. And therefore, if we are able to, it's a very, very difficult emotional process, to disconnect from this world where lacking these individuals in this horrific way that it happened is terrible and difficult and impossible to understand, to overcome, and to live with. But if we're able to disconnect for a moment and feel for eternity, feel for complete goodness, feel for kedusha, feel for purity that still remains untouched and unharmed at this very moment. And by behaving the way we said before, just adding a little bit more to what we've been doing till now, more good, more Torah, more purity, more tzniut, and more of everything good,